Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
And we are live. At least we are live. Maybe some of the people watching aren't.
Yeah.
But they're live too. They're just not live live.
They're alive.
They're alive. Welcome to the wonderful, wonderful author, Rebecca Garden-Levington. It's so wonderful to have you on the show.
It's so awesome to be here. I've listened to you for years, I think. As long as you've been on, I've been listening to your interviews, and I'm a big fan.
Okay, I'm automatically a big fan of yours also, and thank you to Charlotte Ofsay for introducing us, except she should have done it long ago.
I mean, we'll have to talk to her about that.
Yeah, except that I didn't know her long ago, so there, you know.
Actually, she and I met, I think, initially, we took the Lyrical Language Lab class together with Renee Latouille years ago, like 2016, 2017, something like that. And I don't think we ever actually met in person. We just knew each other virtually and then sort of kept in touch, you know, via social media and whatnot. And
so we've never physically met Charlotte either.
No. She's in California and LA and I'm in New Jersey. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, we have to organize something here.
Yeah, for sure.
So, so wonderful. We are celebrating your new book, which is out or almost out.
It comes out on the 20th, February 20th,
Just in time for Passover.
Yeah.
And it's a Passover book about the Afikoman that gets away. And show us your wonderful book, Afikoman, Where Did You Go?
Afikoman, Where Did You Go? A Passover Hide-and-Seek Adventure. written by me and illustrated by Noah Kellner, who is an Israeli illustrator.
And so you're going to tell us. Yes, you're going to tell us how all this happened. So a few words about this book and the publisher. It's a new imprint, Rocky Pond, right?
Yep. Penguin and, Random House, Rocky Pond. It's headed by Lori Horneck. She's basically the imprint, and she's amazing.
So the wonderful thing about this, you know, with a new imprint, I think that they're maybe not even a year old, and you're one of the first books, which means she's putting all of her, I'm going to say Easter eggs in one basket, and really counting on this book, and I can see why, because it's a very clever take on the Afikoman story. And it's full of charm and humor. Tell us about it and read a few pages and show some of Noah's charming illustrations.
Sure.
And I'm gonna give it away.
Give away the ending though.
No, okay, but you have to run out and buy this book. You know, whether you're Jewish or you collect Easter eggs, it's a very cute story. Tell us about it, Rebecca.
Basically, I like to describe it as the Gingerbread Man meets Where's Waldo. I'd always wanted to do a fractured fairy tale version of the Gingerbread Man, because I just think it's a funny story.
I'm doing this as we speak.
Uh-oh, I'm sorry.
And now everybody knows.
Oh no. Well, I didn't spill it.
This was one of the questions I was going to ask you
Oh,
because,
okay.
why doesn't it say run as fast as you can? You can't catch me. I'm the ethical man.
Well, I thought of that, but then I
I'm
thought not.
sure. Okay.
I decided to go come up with my own refrain.
Okay.
But this was sort of the blending of two things. Like, as a Jewish person who celebrates Passover every year, and Passover has always been basically my favorite holiday because I describe it as to non-Jews, I say it's the Jewish Thanksgiving. It's the time when you come together, you eat lots of yummy food, you talk about what you're thankful for. And freedom and how happy you are to have the things in your life. And also because now I live on the West Coast, my family lives on in the San Francisco area. And when
You
I
just said,
moved,
one second, hold on. You're on the East Coast.
oh, I'm sorry, I don't know my
Oh.
direction. I'm in New Jersey. My family still lives in the Bay Area, California. And when I moved out here after college, the time that I would go home would be Passover. Like that was the time when we all got together. And I always made a point, no matter what was going on in my life, to go home. And so it's a very special time for me. And so I knew I wanted to write a story about Passover in general. And as a kid, my favorite part of the Seder, as is the favorite part of most children, is the looking for the Afikoman. And for people who don't know what that is, it's basically a piece of matzah. And matzah is a flat, very tasteless cracker unless you slather some butter on it,
Or chocolate.
or chocolate or something. You need to have something on it, otherwise it tastes like cardboard. But it's a piece of cracker, and you, as part of the symbolism of the Seder, there's a part at which you break one of the matzahs in half ish. And the larger piece becomes the Afikoman and is wrapped up in a napkin or in a special pouch and is hidden by the leader of the Seder somewhere in the house. And after we eat our meal, the kids run around the house looking for this piece of Afikoman. And then there's usually some sort of prize. In my house, it was $1, which was a lot of money in those days. So that it was just fun. It was like a time to be with my cousins and my sister and whoever else was at the Seder, and we would run around and just have a good time. And so I wanted to bring that joy and excitement to a book. And I just thought it would be really cool if the Afikoman himself was a character. And so the story is essentially, the kids from the Seder in the book chasing around this Afikoman who's hiding from them. And then on each spread of the book, Noah Kellner has created these amazing, elaborate spreads that are intentionally busy to, trick the reader of the book to try to, they have to now find the Afikoman on the page. Sort of like Where's Waldo
Show
or the
us
Richard
the
Scarry.
page. Show us the
George.
page.
Also, I love these end papers. Like you can see, he's so cute. Do you want me to read some or you want me to just
Yes,
show?
but I mean, we're on the roll now with the illustrations. So show
Yeah.
us one of these, and in every illustration, and I don't think you see it the first time round, which is wonderful. It's like you have to look back, and then on every illustration,
Yeah, so
somewhere
like
in the picture,
somewhere in the picture is this
the
little Afikoman. And as you
Afikoman
can see, like Noah really used lots of browns and beiges to sort of trick the reader because the Afikoman is beige and brown. So there's a lot of camouflage, and she has like a lot of things that look like the Afikoman in the pages, but is not. And so I showed this to my dad, and he was like, "Are you sure he's in there?" By the
Yeah,
way, this looks exactly like my room as a kid.
so
Complete disaster.
in each double spread, and that's why they don't find it because wherever they look, he's moving, he's hiding.
That's right. He's in a different place, in a different room. Yeah.
And we won't give away the very, very adorable ending, except to say that if you were true to the gingerbread man story, he should be eaten in the end. And that's usually how we end our Passover Seder, or at least the meal, by eating the half of the afikoman. That would be very such a sad thing to do in such a lovely and positive book as yours.
Well, I'll tell you a secret, Mal. The original ending did have him eaten.
Of
So that's
course.
a spoiler. Spoiler, he does not get eaten. But I mean, there's a little trick, right? There's a little twist at the end, so I'm not going to give that part away. But the original version did have him 100% gone, eaten. And my editor, Lori Hornick, was like, it's a little bit too cannibalistic. She's like, I don't know if the kids are gonna like that. And I said, well, if you look at the gingerbread man, he always gets eaten at the end.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
He doesn't?
Because I'm writing about him, and I just saw a cartoon yesterday where a bird picks him from the fox with her beak at the last moment, and flies in the air, and the gingerbread man says, "You're probably going to eat me, right?" And the bird says, "No, I don't like gingerbread man." And she's, "I don't like gingerbread man," and she drops him. So I was guessing that even if you wanted to have the Afikoman eaten, there would be an editor that wants a Hollywood ending. This is something that we have to live with, and so does the Afikoman.
Well, I mean, my original version, or in my brain, I actually had some back matter originally with this, where I was interviewing, or he was being interviewed, and he was like this really like arrogant, smarmy guy, and so in my brain, when I was writing this, I was thinking of him as sort of a villain character, and so in my head, I was like, well, I think the kids are going to want him to get eaten, get his just desserts, And so I thought that would be fun. But as Noah, once I mean, that's a good example of like how the illustrations sort of inform thinking.
You're ahead of me here.
Oh,
So
okay, sorry.
you said just desserts, and that's really a good pun here.
Yes.
And you've departed from the natural way that we celebrate the Seder, because you said this: you cannot go on with the second half of the Seder until you've eaten the Afikoman. So there's a little conservatism there, or Reform Jewry, but it's okay with me. And you
Okay.
have some of the people with the skull caps and some of the without, and it's a love fest.
Yes.
So you talked about the relationship with the illustrator. Whose idea was it to have this Afikoman hiding in each double spread? How did that come about?
That was my idea from the original version of it. That's how I pitched it. Basically, exactly that way as Gingerbread Man meets Where's Waldo. That was my original pitch. And Lori picked up on it immediately. I think this sold in like 5 days after submission. She's like, I love it. I have the illustrator in mind. Like she knew she could see it immediately, which does not always happen. And so I was thrilled. Yeah. So that was
And
my idea, the whole concept.
there's other Afikoman picture books, but this one has a really unique voice to it. You forgot to read us a page or two.
I didn't forget it. You told me to just show you the illustrations first. So now I will read. I'm trying to
Okay.
play by your rules,
No,
Mel.
you don't have to play by my rules. This is your show, dear.
All right, I'll just read a little.
Rebecca rules.
Rebecca rules. All right. Have you seen the Afikoman? He's a silly, sneaky guy. But together we will find him. We can do this, you and I. All my cousins and my sister will be searching for him too. But that prize is ours. I know it. I'm determined. How about you? Is he hiding somewhere high? Is he hiding somewhere low? Afikoman? Afikoman? Afikoman, where'd you go? We dismantle all the cushions and explore beneath each chair, in between the stacked Haggadahs and the curls of Savta's hair. Then we sprint to Ima's office, scan the desk, the plant, the floor, and we sift through scattered papers, poke our heads in every drawer. Is he hiding somewhere high? Is he hiding somewhere low? Afikoman, 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 where'd you go?
Fantastic. And we're going to get back to your penchant for writing in gorgeous rhyme. And now's a good time to go back to Rebecca from the beginning. And
Okay.
then we'll talk about your other two lovely books that are behind you, which are, I would say, completely different. They're very different
Totally different. Yeah.
than the new one. But this is a good time to go back to Rebecca from the age of zero.
Okay. Once upon a time. So I was born
Once
in.
upon a time, and it doesn't have to rhyme.
Okay, well, that's good because it's not gonna. I was born in Smithtown, New York, which is on Long Island. And my parents moved to the Bay Area in California, Foster City, when I was 2 years old, two and a half. And then I grew up out in the Bay Area. And okay, I don't know where to go from there. So I had a pretty normalish childhood until at age seven, my parents divorced. And that definitely played a huge role in how I grew up and my feelings about my family and my parents and all of that. I always loved reading from a very, very young age. I always loved writing. I've kept a journal since I was seven. And I have journals up in my attic, like hundreds of journals up in my attic. And I still keep a journal to this day.
Wow.
Not every day. I used to do every day for a long time. But now it's more like every few days, I check in with my journal.
You've already killed 17 trees, you realize.
Well, I'm sorry that
But there's two bishvat, and we can plant a few more.
Yeah.
So one second now, before you go further, as a small child, well, this is the poignant because my theory that us writers who write picture books are stuck at the age of five, six, seven, four. I guess you're stuck there, even though you write for a bit younger age. You're like, I see you as a 5-year-old.
See, I thought about this a lot because I listened to your podcasts. And I actually think I am about seven because my picture books, Afi Komen definitely goes down a little bit in age than my usual stuff. Both Whatever Comes Tomorrow and Brainstorm, I feel like is a little bit older. Brainstorm is about brainstorming and ideas and about writing. So that's usually more like, I feel like second, third grade, which is like seven, eight, right? And then Whatever Comes Tomorrow is about managing your anxious feelings, your feelings of worry about the future, about the unknown, which also is sort of a and it's written in like lyrical rhyme, so and it has a lot of some big words in there. So I feel like it's slightly older than
Okay,
five, like
I'm gonna yeah, okay, so if you peg yourself as a 7-year-old, who am I to argue with you?
But I think that seven-ish was like when I started really feeling things deeply, if that makes any sense. A lot of my
Yeah,
books,
and the Whatever Comes Tomorrow, which is ostensibly a picture book, but it's actually for any age. It's
exactly.
a universal story, and this I think maybe comes from this pain that you're working through, and that all of us have. It's wonderful. So a little bit, we'll get to your gorgeous books. A little
Okay.
bit more about
A little bit
Rebecca.
more. Okay, let's see.
Ah,
So,
you didn't tell us what your favorite picture books were when you were growing up.
as a kid, that's a great question. I really loved all the Dr. Seuss books. I was super into poetry in general, but those books, also Shel Silverstein, I was like huge Shel Silverstein fan, still am. I know there's some controversies about him, but and Dr. Seuss,
I mean,
but
exactly.
I mean, like, I can't help it. That's what I grew up on.
All the great authors are a subject of controversy these days.
Right. So, but yes, I've always been a fan of rhyme and poetry in general, like very young. I have a notebook somewhere where I literally like would copy poems that I loved into my notebook, and then I would try to create my own poems that sounded like those poems. And I was mimic, I mean, very early. I'm saying like 8, 9, 10, like I was really I was reading Emily Dickinson. I was reading, you know, Robert Frost. I would go to the library to check out, you know, poetry books, because I don't know. There was something about the rhythm and about the flow and the meaning behind words that has always attracted me from very early on.
And the nonsense and the Lewis Carroll.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It all. All of them. Everything.
Okay.
Yes.
And then you went and you became a journalist major. Magazine journalism. What is that?
Right. Well, so I went to
You have
college.
A master's in magazine journalism.
Yes, I do. So I went to undergraduate at UCLA, and I was a communications major because that was the closest thing you could get to, it's a liberal college. So it was like, there was no journalism major. There was no writing major. Like, it was communications. So it's very, very broad. I had a minor in business because I felt like I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I thought that would be a good, you know, backup, or I didn't know what I wanted. So I did a few internships in advertising, because I thought that's sort of a mix of creativity and business. And I thought, well, maybe that'll, you know, connect with me. It didn't really. But after graduating, I decided to move to New York. I was very, very close with my grandmother, who lived on Long Island. And she said, you know, would you like to come live with me while you get on your feet? And I was like, yes, I would. I love you. And I would rather be with you than go back home to my broken family. No offense, mom and dad.
Rebecca, there's a story here.
Oh, there's so many stories.
I'm waiting.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm still working through them all.
All right.
So I lived with my grandma on Long Island. I commuted to the city. I had a job in advertising for about a year-ish change. And I realized that it wasn't quite hitting the note that I needed. I was, the people I was working for, the advertising agency, you know, recognized that I was a good writer. They would give me all the writing things. So I would write press releases, or if there was copy for an ad that we were working on, they would bring me in and ask me, which is amazing. I was like 20 years old, and they were, you know, in addition to me going out to get the coffee, they were actually, you know, letting me do some stuff. And then I had seen there was a night class for feature writing, feature journalism through the NYU extension. And I was like, you know what? Maybe try that. I don't know. That sounds fun. So I took this class in magazine journalism at night. And this should have been the tip off that journalism was not for me. But as part of the class, you had to like go out and interview people, and then you'd write the story. But I was so shy, and I knew that I wasn't being really graded in this class. So I made it all up. I like just made up people.
Come on.
That I
interviewed. That's hilarious.
I know. And the teacher loved my stuff. And he's like, you should totally get a degree in journalism. And I was like, okay. So I applied to NYU master's in journalism, and I got in. I got a scholarship. It was like a year and a half program. And I did that. But then I realized once I was there, I actually had to go out and interview people.
Real people.
And during that time, I did an internship with Newsday, New York Newsday. I did an internship with the New York Observer. I did an internship with Advertising Age magazine. And so I was doing all of this literally like for Newsday, like they would be like, okay, so there was a body found in a closet in Harlem. Can you go interview the neighbors? And I'm like 21, 22, and you know, like, I'm like, what? I don't know how to do that. But they would just send me, and I would be like, okay, and knock, knock, knock. Hi, how do you feel about, you know, the fact that there was a body found next door neighbor's closet? And I did some crazy things, and I can't believe I did it. Honestly, it feels like somebody else. But anyway.
We need an example here, a real example here.
Well, that's a real example right there.
That's a real example.
That's a literally I did that. Like
I thought you made that one up.
Oh no. I covered I tell my kids that there was a Ku Klux Klan rally that I covered. I had to go down, I had to interview people who were protesting it and people who were for it. I went to I did some silly things too. Like they send me, there was like a storm coming and they're like, okay, go to LaGuardia and interview people who've been stranded and tell us how they feel. Like, okay. So I'd walk up to people who are like lounging on all their luggage and they've been there for like 12 hours. I'm like, so how do you feel about your, plane delayed for 12 hours? And they're like, are you kidding me? So yeah, these were real examples. And I realized very quickly that at least newspaper journalism was definitely not for me. It was too fast. The pace, you had to get the story, get all the quotes. First of all, you had to talk to people, which again, I'm an introvert, was not my thing. Then you had to run back to the newsroom and type it all up in 2 hours. And like, it was so stressful for me. Somehow I survived that, and then ended up getting a job in magazine after I graduated at a magazine called American Demographics, which no longer exists, but was actually quite fascinating despite the title. It was all about consumer trends and why people, spend money on things that they do, like pets. Like I did a whole feature story about pets and how people spend all this money on their pets, like their children, and things like that. And I loved that job. But again, with magazines, I had a little bit extra time, right? I had like 2 weeks to turn in a feature versus 2 hours, so that was better. But I missed playing with words. Like I missed spending time luxuriating in, wordplay and meaning and all of that. So it wasn't quite the right fit either. So should I keep going? I feel like I'm talking a lot.
You are, but it's your show, and I'm having so much fun. So
Oh, okay.
I have to assume that the listeners are as well.
Oh,
But I
no.
mean, at some stage during the day, you do want to start talking about your poetry career and how you got into
Yes. I'm
children's
sorry.
literature.
Yes, you
No,
gotta
don't be
keep.
sorry. We're having fun.
So anyway, so long story short, I quit journalism. I did do freelance journalism for a few years, got pregnant with my first son, decided, okay, I'm gonna be a mom now. Spent 6 years being a mom. Had another son, I had two kids. And when my second son went to school and I had some free time, I missed writing. I missed playing with words, like I said. I missed poetry. I took a local class that was called Where Do I Begin? It was literally just like, where do you begin? And the teacher ended up being a middle grade author who she kept giving us these prompts, and I kept coming up with poetry. I kept coming up with these little poems. And she said, have you thought about children's books? And even though I had read all these books with my kids and loved them, it never occurred to me until she said that. I'm like, oh wait, people
Who is
write.
this author? Let's shout out.
Oh my God, her name was Lizzie Foley.
Okay.
She wrote, I think she only wrote one book. I don't know what she's doing now. I haven't been in touch with her.
Okay.
But she wrote a book. Now I can't remember the title. And maybe she's written more, but I don't think so. I feel like I would have heard about it.
So she
But she
said
was
to you,
amazing.
why did
I'm
you
sorry.
write? And you said, write for kids. And you said, oh, my goodness, why
Yeah, and
didn't
I said, okay. She said, oh, have you heard of the SCBWI? And I was like, nope. And it just turned certain, like in a few months, they were having their conference that summer in New Jersey. And I said, I'm going to go to the conference. Why not? I'm going to learn about this. And so I did. And it was my people. And I realized, like, this, I did a, session with Lori Degman, who is an amazing rhymer, and who subsequently, like a couple of years later, I ended up winning a mentorship from. And she is actually directly responsible for a brainstorm
This
happening.
is
There's
crazy
so many
because
stories, Belle. There's so many stories.
no, because somebody sent me one of her stories as a comp for something I'm writing, somebody in my critique group. This is crazy, right?
Oh, and
Yeah.
also I know that you've interviewed Ariel
Ariel
Bernstein.
Bernstein, yeah.
Yeah, so she, Ariel, hi Ariel, she is local to New Jersey. And she was at that conference, the very first conference I went to in 2016. And I was like the wallflower. I was sitting by myself. And she came up to me and she's like, hi, are you
And she
new? You
said,
know, she's.
"Hi, I have a balloon."
Well, yeah, exactly. And so she, at that time, none of her books had been published yet. They were
Yeah.
all under contract.
I love these stories. I love the
And
stories.
she was like such so kind to me, and she welcomed me into the
She is
fold.
so kind.
So kind. Yeah.
She's really kind. I can tell everybody. She's really kind.
She is. So
I,
that was sort
after
of
after the interview, she introduced me to a lot of other authors. So she's the real thing. I have a feeling you are too. Keep going.
thanks. Yeah, so that was so that I realized like that is what I wanted to
No, but I
do.
mean, you went to the New Jersey show. Did you have a manuscript? Did you meet anybody?
I met Ariel. I
No.
did this thing with Lori Degman, or I didn't meet her at that show. I didn't meet her there, but I went to her rhyming man, her rhyming session. And as she was talking, I was like, yes, this is it. This is what I want to do. And I want to learn more. And I did have some what I thought were manuscripts at that time, but they were not. They were just poems. And I didn't quite understand at that time what it meant to be like a rhyming author. Like I didn't understand that there's a way to do it correctly and there's a way to do it not correctly. And I thought I was doing it correctly because I had an ear for it. Like I always had a rhythm for it. I've read a lot of poetry, so it's sort of in my genes. But I had this one manuscript and I would give it to somebody to read and they would read it. And I would say, you're reading it wrong. And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm reading your manuscript. No, but you're putting the syllables in the wrong, you know, because when you write something, you know where you want how people, you want them to stress it and whatever. And if you're not writing it correctly, if you are not putting in the, you know, the natural stresses in the right order, then somebody's going to trip on it. No matter what.
People are going to read it the way that they
They're going
want
to
to
read
read
it
it,
wrong. Yeah.
not the way that you think that you wrote it. And
Exactly. And so I
this
didn't
is the
understand
biggest,
that.
well, this is the biggest difficulty, of course,
Yes.
for rhyme, because the rhyme has to have a meter and has to have a rhythm,
Yes.
and most people don't understand that,
Yes.
but you do. So keep going.
Yeah, so I didn't though at that
Yeah.
time. Like I thought I knew, but I didn't know what I
But
didn't know.
Rebecca, this is the most important, you see. I'm an old Jewish guy. It took me over 60 years to realize that I wasn't writing well. So like there's a moment where you go to an SCBWI meeting thinking that you're really good, and you look
Yes.
around, everybody writes much better than you do, and look at your manuscript and say, "Oy vey, oy
Yes.
vey, what's this
Yes.
mishigas? I gotta
Yeah.
learn."
Exactly. That's exactly what happened. Like I was like, oh, okay. Well, I thought I was amazing, and apparently I am not. And so after that, I took Renee Latulippe's Lyrical Language Lab class.
Hi, Renee.
It changed my life completely because now, like she explained, like this is the science of rhyme. Like this is you, there is a way to do it correctly. And then you can play. Like once you know the rules, then you can play with it, but you need to understand the rules. And I did not understand the rules. I was just doing it by the seat of my pants, which was good-ish, but it was not right. And so once I learned the actual rules, and then I practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced, and I swapped with people and I learned and I joined poetry groups and critique, whatever. And so it took time. Like, you know, that was 2016 when I started. I didn't sell my first book until 2020. You know, like it definitely, I mean, believe me, I know that's fast in the world for a lot of people, but you know, it still took a lot of time and I put in a lot of effort.
I'm going to say something, and I keep saying this. Even if you're really good, the chance is still 1 in 100. But when I read your bio, I've had several people on the show who came from advertising and magazines and journalism, and they understand. It's not like people like me who came from science and thought that if you could write a scientific article, you could write a children's book. But you. Because of your background and your capabilities, as soon as you learned a few letters in the alphabet, you were running. And most of us have to learn all the letters in the alphabet and more. My feeling is that your background was really helpful. You know, and like you've been writing for magazines and you're a journalist, and you know how to condense a story and how to find the empathy in a story and how to talk to the reader. And this is so obvious in your writing.
Oh,
So
thank you.
keep going. How did you find Caitlin? How did you get your career
Oh.
going? How did you become one of the 1,000?
Oh my goodness. Oh, there's so many stories. Okay, so
Briefly, dear, briefly.
I'm trying. I'm not a brief person. as you're learning. Okay, so I think the best place to start is 2019, I applied for the PB Chat mentorship program, which I don't think exists anymore, but it was a mentorship that you were matched if you were selected, you were matched if you were lucky enough to be selected, you were matched with a published writer. I was lucky enough to be chosen by Lori Degman, along with two other wonderful writers, Jenna Waldman and Kelly Conroy, who are now very close friends and critique partners with me. So the three of us were matched with Lori, and with Lori, you know, I worked again on some manuscripts, none of which sold. But at the end of the mentorship, she said, "You know, would you like me to introduce you to some of the editors that I've worked with?" And I said, "Of course." I didn't have an agent. And she introduced me to Sarah Rocket at Sleeping Bear.
Wow.
And it was a huge introduction. And I sent her what I had been working on with Lori, one of the manuscripts, the one that I loved the most. And she's like, "This is nice. I like your rhyme, but this is not for us." But she said, "I love your rhyme. If you have anything else, feel free to send it." So I sent her another one. And she rejected that one. And I sent her another one. And she rejected that one. And then I had brainstorm. And I was like, I'm just going to go ahead and send it because I don't have an agent. So this is the opportunity. So I just sent it. And she loved it. And short story, even though it really took many, many months, they acquired it. And that became my first book. And before, but before they picked, yay! But before they had picked it up, I was querying Brainstorm with a bunch of agents. And one of those agents was Caitlin. Caitlin Sanchez is my current agent. But at the time, she had just started agenting. She had opened up to queries for literally 3 days in the summer of 2019. I think it's 2019. No, 2020. Sorry, 2020. And she was flooded, of course, with queries. And she took on like 14 clients, right, all at once. And she got in touch with me. She's like, "I really love this. I love." She asked me for more work. I sent her more work. She said, "I really like your stuff, but I've just taken on 14 clients. I really need to not take on any more. Can I hold your stuff for the future?" And I said, "Of course." So, like 2 or 3 weeks later, I got the offer for Brainstorm. And I didn't go back to her because she had just rejected me. And so I felt like, okay, well, she wouldn't take me 2 weeks ago. She's not going to take me now. So I ended up doing that deal on my own. I moved on. And then that fall or that winter, there was a SCBWI one-on-one critique day through my New Jersey chapter, and it was a Zoom critique. And I happened to be matched with Luana Hori at HarperCollins. And the manuscript that I sent her, she wasn't crazy about, but she also specifically said to me, like, rhyme is a very hard sell. You know, it doesn't translate well. It's hard. And so I was like, okay, you know, I get it. It's fine. Like, thank you so much for your time. She happened to have a week-long submission window after the conference, and I had a brand new story called I Will Always Be, and I loved it, and I thought it had potential. And I said, you know what? Again, I don't have an agent, so I'm just going to go ahead and send it, come what may. So I sent it. 2 months later, I got an email from her saying, "I love it so much. Please tell me it hasn't been acquired. I want to acquire it." So I was in a panic. And she sent me this offer, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, what do I do with this?" So I went at the time, I went back to the 10 agents that I had sent it out to. none of which was Caitlin. Because again, Caitlin was closed to submissions, so I wasn't going to bother her. I had sent that story, I will always be, to a bunch of agents. Out of 10 agents, they all rejected me. Six of them never responded to me at all. Three of them asked for more work and then passed. And I forget what happened with the other one, but they all rejected me. And then I still had this contract from HarperCollins. And I said, I need help. It's 20 pages long. I don't know what it is. I don't understand what this says. So I actually just went back. I emailed Caitlin and I said, look, I know you liked my stuff before. I know you're not open to submissions right now. But she had just moved to a new agency. So I thought maybe she had a little more bandwidth. So she said, oh, I love this. Send me more of your current stuff. I did. And then we had a call and she signed me. And so that's.
It's a great story. I want to summarize because I want to show both the books before we conclude. So what have we learned here? First of all, it's okay to pester. And go to conferences and show your stuff and don't be afraid and ignore what everybody says about Rhyme, except that it's very difficult because if you find the right agent and the right editor, there's nothing like a terrific rhyming book. And I'm saying this as somebody who doesn't necessarily write in rhyme, certainly appreciate it as a musician. And persevere and write and improve and use your background, which in your case is a wonderful background in journalism and advertising. And I think it's wonderful. And so let's have a look at these two books. I'm going to have you back because you have a couple of books coming out next year that have been announced and some stuff I don't know about. But just show us a little bit of Brainstorm, which I love in particular. Because it's about the writing process, of somebody who's stuck and you unstick them. And yes. One of my favorite author illustrators is Myra Kullman. And she's been on the show and I'm crazy about her. And there's something very Myra Kullman-esque in this, which makes me love it even more. So show a little bit of it. Read us a little bit of it.
Sure. So this is illustrated by Kate Cronreif, who lives in Vienna. I think she's British, but she lives in Vienna right now. And this is about a girl who, much like me, has to come up with ideas and gets stuck. And she imagines a storm brewing outside her window of ideas falling down from the sky. So that's where I got this idea from.
This is like Story Storm.
Exactly. Exactly.
Nothing. And then bang, bang, bang.
Yeah, exactly. Teacher says it's time to write. Ugh, I clench my pencil tight. I peek outside. It's gloomy, gray, cloudy, like my brain today. I think and think, but nothing's there. I slump. I sulk. I sigh. I stare. But then, kerplink, I feel a drop. One tiny thought. Then more. Flip, flop. Words and pictures pitter-pat. Drip, then drizzle. Plunk, plonk, splat. And then obviously it goes on and the storm.
No, show the next page.
Oh, okay.
That's the Myra Kullman-esque page.
Oh, okay. I don't know that. I'm going to have to look her up.
Yeah, you sure do.
An easy breeze becomes a blast of funny phrases flying past. Whoa, I laugh as nouns swirl round. An adverb knocks me to the ground.
I love it.
Thanks.
It really is brilliant, Rebecca.
Thank you so much.
And while you were reading it, as somebody who calls themselves introverted, which I already contest and I've known you for 30 minutes, is the way that you read the story and the way that the story tells itself and the way that the story lends itself to theater. And this is exactly what I talked about with Renee Latulippe a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
And it's not for me. Alan Johnson talked about it at SBWI. Is the importance of a book being theater,
right?
And making it easy for a parent who's not necessarily a thespian or a librarian or a grandparent to become an actor while reading the book, and that is what this is all about. It's beautiful, and now whatever comes tomorrow,
okay,
which is
sure.
A book about optimism in the face of pessimism. And
Yes.
it's a subject that's been done many times, and yet you find a new beautiful way to do it. And I love your illustrations of the other books, but this one just
They're
is
phenomenal.
incredible. This
Yeah.
is the illustrator from Barcelona.
Mariona Cabassa.
From
Yeah. She's
Barcelona, right?
Barcelona. Yeah.
We have to get her on the show. This is
I've never
she's
actually met her. I've never spoken to her. We've had, Instagram correspondence, but that's pretty
well,
much it.
we usually don't get to meet our illustrators.
I know. It's really sad. I did meet Kate, on Zoom, but I haven't met Noah and I haven't met Mariona. I don't know. It's just the way it is. So sad. Anyway, but yeah, she
So
did a gorgeous
we
job.
can fix it. Reach out to her
Okay, I will.
and
Maybe we'll.
say Mel wants to have you on the show. Do you speak English? Because if I have to
I think
speak to
she
her
does. Mariona, I believe, does.
in Spanish or Catalan, it's going to be a major problema.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she does. Okay, so I'll read a little bit of this. So basically, what happened with this one is that. So I've suffered from anxiety my whole life. I didn't know that that's what it was, until I became an older, until I went to therapy. And this was sort of like a poem that I wrote for myself, to remind myself that, whatever happens, whatever comes tomorrow, you're going to get through it. You've done it before. You're going to get through it again, and so it was just that kind of feeling. I'm going to read, I think I'll read towards the middle because that's, here, I'll read here, starting here.
I had anxiety for decades, dear.
Yeah.
I had agoraphobia. I like stayed home for a decade.
Oh, wow.
So, anxiety is my middle name.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to hear that. Well, hopefully this book helps you.
It helped me a lot.
Okay. All right.
I might even sleep tonight.
So this is towards the middle. Tomorrow may bring obstacles that seem too hard to face. Tomorrow may bring feelings that will need some extra space. Tomorrow may bring questions that you have no answers for, or answers that may lead you to more questions than before.
Hold on a second. Go back. One second. This is brilliant. This is the interplay between the author and the illustrator. Look how she made a double spread of those two last ones. Okay? So sometimes she has both couplets in a double spread, and sometimes
Yes.
she stretches it out. And this one is so beautiful. Go back, go back, go back. Look at that. And she's looking at a wilted plant. So there's a little bit about loss and grief and death in there, but the picture is so gorgeous. Can you read it again with the illustration? I'm
Tomorrow may bring questions that you have no answers for. Yeah, we could do a whole. Actually, you know what? If you want to have me back with Mariona, we could like really talk about how the illustrations were created. I mean, it was a process for sure. It was a lot of back and forth and negotiating and because my ideas for this book were totally different than what happened. And I'm so happy with how it turned out. But I was much more, when I wrote this book, even especially this one. Tomorrow may bring questions that you have no answers for. That was me thinking about my parents' divorce. Like
Yeah,
I was thinking of
but
my.
what did you, were you one of those authors who writes art notes?
I do if they're necessary. In this case, I did not. I did not give any art notes for any of it,
And okay,
but.
well then you get something that's splendid, that's the connection with the illustrator looking at her life and her anxieties.
Right. But my editor
That's
did.
the magic. That's the
I know.
miracle.
But my editor did ask me for suggestions for each spread, which I gave her. But then Mariona took it to a different place, and we realized that we needed it to be lighter, right? Or more in.
Again, the editor and publisher
Oh,
is.
I'm sorry. Barefoot Books. And the editor is Lisa Rosinski at Barefoot. So she's. Awesome, amazing. Amazing.
And, and this is a wonderful publisher. And the other one is Sleeping Bear.
Another one's Sleeping Bear, and then this one's Penguin Random House, Rocky Pond.
Okay, well, we already talked about Laurie, and the editor of Brainstorm
Oh,
is
Brainstorm is Sarah Rocket, who's also amazing.
incredible. Oh, we have to get her on the show.
Oh, yeah, for sure. She would do it, I think.
I think I'm going to hire you as a co-anchor.
Okay.
All right.
So, I don't know. Do you want, should I continue reading or next? Yeah. Okay. All right. So
no,
tomorrow.
Because we want people to run out and buy the book.
Oh, okay. So then I'm not, so then we're done. Yes.
No. One more pitch.
One more. All right.
I love this. Right. And sometimes we have answers to the questions that we read this
again. Or answers that may lead you to more questions than before.
Beautiful.
Tomorrow may bring anything. You have no way to know. And sometimes that uncertainty gives worries room to grow. They sprout and bloom, consume your mind. You want to run and hide. But you've confronted fear before and reached the other side. So that's
beautiful.
Kind of the gist of the book. And then, you know, obviously it goes on.
So, Rebecca, Garden with a Y, Remington.
Yes.
This has been a wonderful interview.
Yes.
And for an introvert, I mean, they're going to have to redefine the word.
Well, I don't think introvert means that you don't like to talk to people. I think it means that...
Well, what does it mean? That you don't like chocolate ice cream?
No, it means that when you do talk to people, then you need some time to recharge on your own. So like when I do an author visit, I do enjoy it. It scares me, but I'll do it and I get the adrenaline and it's fun. But then I need like a day to like recuperate by myself.
Even everybody says that I'm an extrovert, right? But that's what people say. But I can get nervous before an interview. And, you know, when I had agoraphobia, I couldn't speak to one person at a time, let alone 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people, they pigeonhole you. You're a this and you're a that. But actually, we're very complicated. And sometimes I know teachers that are very comfortable in the classroom, and then they go home and they're very, very well flourish. So it depends on context. And that's what makes your book so lovely.
I actually have a talk about this coming out, but I can't talk about it.
not the ones that were announced for 2025?
No, so I have 7 more books coming. Two of them haven't been announced yet. Yeah.
And one of those is the one that hasn't been announced yet.
Yeah, I have 2. Yeah, one of them hasn't been. That one hasn't been announced yet.
Listen, I'm not going to have you back on the show every month, though.
Okay.
Unless you become a co-host. But we'll talk about that.
Okay.
Introverted Rebecca.
but they all are in rhyme. So I'm just saying that anybody who says that rhyming books don't sell is not true. You just have to do them well, and you have to find the right
rhyming
editor.
Books. Sell if you write them very well.
Yeah.
And if you don't,
that's it.
They won't.
That's right. Exactly.
Writing them is very hard. It's even harder than a chart.
Yes.
Now you know why I don't.
You need to take Renee's class there, Mel. Just a tip.
I'm too late for that. So to the introverted, I had so much fun interviewing you, Rebecca, that I forgot to introduce the program.
Oh, you did. You do that a lot.
When I'm having fun. So this has been, so I'm Mel Melvin with a Y, Rosenberg, and I'm the host of the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network, who forgot to introduce the program. And I've been here with the wonderful, amazingly talented, super writer, Rebecca Garden with a Y, Levington, talking about her gorgeous books, her career, her love for poetry and rhyme, and for humanity. And so we're gonna say goodbye to everybody, and then go out and come back in the same link, and we'll talk about the future.
Okay, sounds good. All right, thank you so much.
Have I forgotten anything?
I mean, like I said, we could talk forever. I feel like I could tell you so many stories, but. No, I don't think we've forgotten anything.
Say something except hoping for peace and, you know,
100%. Yes, my heart is with you for sure.
But I spent an hour now talking from Israel, not thinking at all about the war, and that's a wonderful thing too. Rebecca, it's been great. Go out and come back, and everybody else, run out and buy her wonderful books, and share this this lovely interview. Bye, everybody else, except for
Bye.
Rebecca.
Thank you. Bye.